What up? Not today, Javi. Not today. What's up, everybody?
I applied some restraint today.
You applied some restraint. I don't know about that. We're going to start racing. We're going to see how we can race ahead. This is Elliot Lane, Javier Jase, Argentinian action figure, as I so dubbed him, international man of mystery, as our colleague Patrick so dubbed him. Javi, what's up, man? How's it going?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Just, obsessed with the amount of news.
You don't sound committed to doing great. I'm not convinced you're doing great. Doing great,
okay.
Man.
Okay. No, I'm just chill, dude. I'm a cannabis guy. Even when I'm not, I'm cannabis.
Ooh, touche. Well, on that note, let's get into it. AT, what are we watching today, brother? Let's go. My guy, Javi.
Womp, womp, womp. Whenever the intro sounds like the low, like the bass, I always go womp, womp, womp. Ooh, womp, womp, womp.
I'm done. That's all I needed for today. Appreciate everybody tuning in. This is Cannabis Insider. Peace. Javi, AT, producer AT in the background, can we please make sure we get Javier's soundbite there and have that as our background music for this podcast? I would much appreciate that. Carlos Cordero, what is up? Appreciate everybody tuning in from Puerto Rico. We have friends all over the place here. We've had from Cannabis Daily. I don't know if you know this, Javi, but we have somebody who listens in from Thailand every day. Nice. We got a global audience here. Appreciate it. Drop your questions, your points in the chat. We have a super, super cool guest today from the Artist Tree. Very unique company. I'm pumped to dive in. What up, Javi?
I love that name. I have a question for Carlos, if he's still there on LinkedIn. Elliot and I were just talking about this before the show. There's this very famous Argentine music producer called Bizarrap. He's done collaborations with some of Puerto Rico's biggest artists, like, you know, Residente from Calle 13 and Arcángel. And yesterday they dropped a track with the top musician right now in the world. It's a Mexican guy called Peso Pluma. And in the middle of him sharing this track, which got 10 million views in under 30 minutes within its debut, the guy posted a picture of him visiting the Jungle Boys facilities. So it's like hit, the Jungle Boys, and then again, the music thing. I want to know if our audience heard about it, what they think, if they know who Peso Pluma is.
If they knew it was the Jungle Boys where he visited. How did you know it was Jungle Boys, Javi?
It's a straight up picture of him, you know, with the sign of their slogan. And also Jungle Boys themselves posted a picture of these guy holding two Jungle Boys bags. So
10 million views in 30 minutes. I know what it's like.
Yeah, man. Right.
The same reason. Oh, I wish I knew what it was like. But Javi, my guy, we have a fun interview today. But you know, honestly, it was kind of a slow start to the day, cannabis news-wise. There wasn't a whole lot going on. However, definitely some stocks to talk about. But what's top of your mind? I know you have an ancillary play that got a nice bit of financial news today.
Yeah, man. NASDAQ traded Springbig Holdings, SBIG, on the NASDAQ. They provide a software as a service-based marketing solutions, mobile app solutions, omni-channel loyalty programs for the cannabis industry. Close to date, a $4 million public equity offering. The Roth Capital Partners acted as the sole placement agency. They raised it about, like, after expenses, about $3 million, which... By the way, what an expensive way to raise capital.
That is very expensive.
25%, where did that go? And what is Roth Capital Partners doing? I want to know what their business is.
Yeah, I'm about to be like, did I choose the wrong career? Probably. I probably chose the wrong career. But that being said, I still enjoy it. But that being like 25% commissions for Roth.
We need to get Roth Capital Partners on the show.
That's crazy, dude. That's insanity. Not to mention like, I mean, check out benzinga.com/cannabis for the cost of that equity when it comes to those investing in the company themselves. But 25% of that to Roth, that's the state of cannabis, man. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just lenders. It's bankers too, that are getting in on it.
What else do we have?
So did you hear about Kronos earlier today?
Yep. Yes,
I don't know if you have that on here, but Kronos shutting down their CBD, operations in the US. And this is from their press release, so I'm not making this up. They are downsizing in order to basically upsize later. Now, I want you to help explain this to me if you can, if you want to, or if you don't like it. Either way, feel free. But they are losing their current footprint in order to be more well-positioned to jump into the marijuana footprint later on.
Indeed. And the one thing that is interesting, right, they have an interesting deal going on with Lord Jones, a very cool brand. And their idea is to bring back Lord Jones to its adult use roots, launching the brand in Canada in the fourth quarter of 2023, which I think is interesting. And as I said, they will continue to invest in R&D and product development in Canada to keep building portfolios of what they call borderless products to equip for when the US THC market opens. So as you mentioned, it's a retreat from the US, but it seems temporary.
They said as much. Right? They said as much in their press release that it's temporary.
Yeah. Well, that remains to be seen, right? Like everyone will say stuff like that. We'll see if they return. But it seems to be a strategy for many Canadian companies where they go like, okay, as soon as THC is permissible in the US, we'll jump in. Before that, it doesn't really make sense to invest a lot. The CBD market is not big enough, and really, you know, they're better off focusing on their Canadian operations, which often suffer, and they got to stay out of the THC business in the US if they want to continue to be traded on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ for these big Canadian operators.
True. Very true. I don't think it's bad. I think there's a couple things that I'm watching now. You know, what does Village Farms do? You know, I mean, I think their cannabis business has actually been growing. So, I mean, do they just keep their Texas CBD initiatives? You know, do they keep that footprint, or, you know, do they follow suit here soon? And then second is, I'm curious, do you feel like that there's still an exit opportunity there for the tobacco industry in Kronos? Like if and when the US ever goes legal?
I mean, yeah, they've already invested quite a bit of money. It's not like they're going to withdraw anytime soon. They invested several. So we're talking about Altria.
Yeah.
They invested several billion dollars into Kronos. So I'm sure that they're just patiently waiting for the moment when this is federally legal and they can jump in and take over. Right. I think at least that's what many analysts say, right? Like between alcohol and tobacco, they will take up a significant stake in the industry once it's federally legal.
Yeah. Well, anyways, man, back to you, dude. Sorry for prolongating that one. I was just curious. Not I had a few questions on that after reading that this morning. And I know the expert Javier Haas always has answers. Always. What else? What else is on your mind? A couple quick
fire. Downsizing is Trulieve Cannabis Corporation, TCNNF on the OTC. They're shutting down another California dispensary, and they're planning to exit the Massachusetts market altogether. Their idea, as Kim Rivers said in a recent interview, you can watch it on Benzinga Cannabis YouTube channel after the show, that they are taking proactive steps to what they call rationalizing cash and margin dilutive assets and streamlining operations, reallocating resources toward a more attractive markets, or what they consider to be more attractive markets with long-term potential. They also are exiting the Nevada wholesale market, so it seems like they're refocusing a lot on their initial.
Now, Trulieve has always been a go deeper, not just surface level touch. Until I mean, a little bit recently, but they're also restricted via a number of licenses in these different states. But I really feel like they're trying to be king and queen of the Southeast. I feel like they are all in on that footprint.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Talking about Florida, which is TrueLeaf's home, one piece of good news out of Florida, cannabis activists in the state have gathered enough signatures to put legalization adult use on the 2024 ballot. They got almost a million petition signatures. They had to collect a little bit under 900,000 ballot signatures and secure the approval of the Supreme Court to get this into the ballot. And it seems like they finally did it. And this news comes on the heels of Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody finally submitting the initiative to legalize adult use cannabis to the state Supreme Court earlier this month.
Yeah, she's a character, that one. Not necessarily a friend to this industry. I think is the nice way
I would say that one.
Yeah, that's the nice way I can put this. All right, Javi, you get one more news story. Pick wisely, my friend. What else are you looking at for the day?
Can I do two quick ones?
Two quick ones, very quick, very quick.
Terrasen Corp TRSSF has partnered up with Dablicator. It's a cannabis hardware company that has already sold more than $100 million in product through several other brand partnerships. And then Zelluria Therapeutics, that is ZLDAF on the OTC, published a clinical trial looking into its drug for diabetic nerve pain management. And the medicine, it seems, at some endpoints to, you know, there's a caveat here, but it outperformed Pfizer's drug called Lyrica, which sells billions of dollars per year. The shares of Zelluria skyrocketed yesterday, more than 220% on the Australian exchange. Not sure where they're standing on the OTC right now.
Good for them. I've always liked Oludare and company over there. Oh, they are good people. They are creative with their products. They're very internationally driven. They obviously are taking a biotech-centric approach to some of their cannabis products, not all of them. But this is really cool. Now, you clarified early, so go check out benzinga.com/cannabis to find out what endpoints those are. They're better at than Pfizer, but better that Pfizer than in any endpoints with the massive amount of resources that firm has versus mm-hmm. how much Zelluria has is impressive.
I'm kicking myself, you know, I don't buy cannabis stocks, as you know, but yesterday the stock was flat on the OTC, even though it was up 220% in Australia. Today, Zelluria Therapeutics, ZLDAF, is up 154% on the OTC.
Hell yeah. Good for them. Good for Oludare. Congrats to Oludare and company over there. That is phenomenal. That being said, Javi, you're done. I'm cutting you off. You are no longer allowed to drive home with cannabis news.
Let's do it.
I'm kidding. Let's bring over a person who's probably way cooler than us, Lauren Fontaine of The Artist Tree. Lauren, welcome in. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
It's going great. Going great. It's an interesting day, interesting time in the cannabis space. I do want to dive into artistry a little bit, you know, in a second, but just a follow up on what Javier and I were just talking about a bit ago. It's been an interesting year for California. There's a lot of news going in a lot of different directions, and you operating in the state itself. Do you have any opinions or perspectives as to why these giant corporate companies are leaving the state?
Yeah, it's a tough market right now in California. And there's a lot of issues. You know, one is that there's oversupply. So there's, you know, too much product being grown or produced for the demand on the legal market. There's still a very active and thriving black market here that the state and cities have not been effective at shutting down. And so it's a real struggle for all the licensed businesses who have to pay all of these licensing fees and taxes and, you know, are still competing very much with the black market. And I think that's different from a lot of other states because the black market here is so established. And we've seen, you know, in our store, several brands that we carried have left the state. It's just hard, you know, for them to be profitable here because of all the competition and the regulations. And then we're seeing a lot of retailers struggle too. One, because competition from other licensed retailers, Two, you know, I think that customers are getting really wary of all these extra taxes that they're having to pay. And there's been a shift in the state on retailers having to pay the excise taxes to the state versus distributors that were paying it in the past. So this is putting kind of another accounting burden on the retailers that they may not be used to. We're hearing from a lot of our vendors that they're having major collections problems. You know, so that's a huge issue right now. And I'm sure, you know, you've talked about how a lot of them are now advocating for regulation on the state level to help them collect and to identify the companies that aren't paying on time. But this is something, you know, we hear. And then within LA, where we have, you know, our first stores and three stores, this market is probably one of the worst for all the licensed businesses because there's so many stores and there's a lot of unregulated operators, even retail facilities that are opening or are still operating. And, you know, they're just in plain sight. So this isn't like a secret underground place. It's they're just operating like regular storefronts and you know, we're competing with them and their pricing. So it's hard. And, I feel fortunate that we've been able to still succeed in this market and but I completely understand why other businesses would leave California.
You know, and just to clarify, and then on Javier, you can dive in for a couple questions and I'll shut up. But Lauren, the bill was introduced to basically you must pay. I don't think it's even coming close to being passed yet, but you must pay your invoices by like 15 days after it's due or you can't continue to, buy from that vendor or buy from any vendor based on credit. There is some sort of bill in that sense. What are your thoughts on that? As an operator in the state of California, California getting that involved in your finances?
You know, so in general, I'm not pro a lot of regulations. I mean, I think that's one of the major issues with the industry here. And so I don't necessarily support the state getting involved in collections for these businesses. I think it should be, you know, left to the businesses. You know, if they aren't collecting, they probably shouldn't do another future order with that retailer. And, you know, they have mechanisms to actually collect on past due bills. I wouldn't say I favor that legislation. I don't think that's the right move. I think the move is more for the state to look at all the hurdles that they're actually putting in place right now for operators that are making it so hard to succeed. And, you know, reassessing some of those, whether it's the tax rates or, you know, any other licensing fees or all the regulations that we have to deal with that are extremely costly and not necessarily being overseeing like people paying and when they have to pay and that type of thing.
You know, globally, California is regarded as the mecca of cannabis, even more so than Colorado many times, right? Like internationally, people talk about weed and they talk about California. What are some of the silver linings, right? We discussed many of the challenges, right? But you're still in business in California. So there has to be something good about it. What is it? What do you feel is good now? And what do you feel will be even better in the near future?
Yeah, so I agree. I mean, I still view us as the center of cannabis culture. And, you know, cannabis is really a major part of the lifestyle here in California. So it's widely accepted. You know, it's very accessible to people to get cannabis products. And there's a huge variety to choose from. There's lots of great stores that are operating at a very high level. So consumers have a lot of great options, you know, and it's more sophisticated than in other markets. And same goes for the products that are available here. And so I think we're lucky because California is so progressive. And, you know, from a licensing standpoint, when we're going into new cities, people are a lot more open and accepting of the products. You know, there's just more of a general community acceptance of cannabis as being okay and not as much of a stigma. So that's really helpful. So I love being here. You know, I'm not going to diss California. I think that we're fortunate that we've really like lived in this whole historical progression from the medical era. And then now, you know, California has always been on the forefront of innovation in the industry in my mind. So, you know, there's a lot of good things, but then there's the flip side.
Yeah, as with any market, right? And, go ahead, Abby.
One thing that I want to commend you on, actually, is that you sell clones and seeds and things for people to grow at home, right? It has surprised me to see across America that many states move to legalize while banning home growing. We know that many or several cannabis companies have lobbied against home growing. And generally, businesses, licensed businesses, seem to be afraid of home growing, right? They see it as this threat to their sales and bottom line, right? But you have found a way to reconcile this. It's like, okay, like people can come to the dispensary and either buy their weed already, like, you know, cultivated, grown, harvested, packaged, curated, or they can buy their supplies from us, right? As a way to reconcile and go like, okay, I can service two different types of clients and not have this conflict where if people are growing at home, I am not seeing any money. I don't know what the question was. Just like explain the rationale there, if it works financially, if you see increased foot traffic or not.
Yeah, so we have always offered clones at our locations, and you know, we viewed it as something that people were looking for and something that consumers wanted, and it's not readily available at a lot of shops. And I don't in any way view it as competition with all of the prepackaged goods that we sell, because I think there are those customers that are really interested in growing their own plant and, you know, really getting in touch with the whole process of growing. And we view it as a way to educate customers as well. So it's kind of akin to, you know, you can go buy tomato seeds and like grow some tomatoes in your garden, mm-hmm. but you're not putting Whole Foods out of business. There's just different things. And, you know, there's rules around how many plants someone can have at home. So they're never going to be able to legally mass produce the products. So if they want to enjoy, you know, homegrown products, we fully support that. And we don't see any issue.
I love that. So I wanted to dive a little bit into you and your story and what you're doing here. Cause you know, I grew up in the arts. A lot of people grew up in the arts in one way or another. And it's a gateway to community. It's a gateway to culture. And in a way, you know, very similarly, cannabis is the same, you know, a gateway to a different kind of community, if not the same community, because listen, I was in theater, I was in music, and it's the same community.
Yeah, they would say you're an artsy kid, and that's several things back in the day.
Yeah, we would want to hang out at your place, Lauren. So just tell me a little bit about how you're marrying the two. Looking at your website, it looks super cool, but how are you doing it? Like, what is your through line here from location to location, just about your ethos in general?
So when we came up with the concept for the artistry, which was really born when California fully legalized for adult use in 2018, we wanted to come up with something that was innovative and different from all the medical dispensaries, but also that really resonated with local communities. And there is this really natural tie-in between art and cannabis, as you mentioned, you know, whether it's artists using it to inspire their works and be more creative, or whether people are consuming so that they can enjoy art and music. But they're integrally connected. And so we thought it would be great if we could create locations that promoted local artists and highlighted that synergy between art and cannabis. So we came up with this concept where our stores would function as cannabis dispensaries, but also art galleries. And we have exhibits, and we design the space so that it looks kind of like an art gallery where there's a lot of dedicated space for artwork. We allow artists to sell the work there. We work with Art Lounge Collective, which does all of our art curation. And we have local artists in each location. So in Fresno, we're featuring Fresno-based artists, and Riverside, you know, Riverside and Inland Empire artists, LA artists from that neighborhood. So we're really trying to focus on people that are local to the community as another way to bring people in. And the other benefit is that it's a concept that's palatable to people that might be apprehensive about cannabis. So, you know, if someone isn't a lifetime stoner, but they're curious and maybe want to come in, we have a store that's inviting and interesting, and they can come and look at the art. And it's a little bit more of a, you know, safer and welcoming experience for newbies than other types of dispensaries.
That's awesome. So I'd love, because I, what I love about what you do is you could go into every city in the US and with your model, you could still feel local. You could still feel like the community owns you. So, I mean, that in its own right is, I think, a huge benefit in terms of community engagement. Do you feel like that gives you an up on competition, just in a business sense? Just because, you know, we were talking to an executive the other day, and they were saying, you know, really, it's events, it's engagement with both budtenders and communities that brands and retailers are currently just not succeeding at. But you are built around that in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think it gives us an advantage in the sense that, you know, we might be more palatable to the local community. But each of our locations, like I said, is really focused on that locality. And so we'll be showcasing, you know, photography of the Fresno area or beach art in our Oxnard location. And so it does feel very authentic to people coming in. You know, we have the artists themselves come in and do live painting or other things so people get to meet them. And our stores are not cookie cutter, right? So each of our locations, you'll come in and it does have a different feel and from the exterior and the interior. So it's, you know, I think it feels like it has a lot more heart and soul than some of the other businesses that kind of just have this more standard model that's all focused on the cannabis sales. And we are really like resonating as an art destination as well as a cannabis shop.
Pride Month is here, and I'm here for it. What are you doing about it?
So we're totally here for it as well. You know, our first store was in West Hollywood. So it's really been Pride and LGBTQ rights and all of that has been really a part of our ethos from the beginning. And when we created that store, we wanted to really pay homage to that and honor the WeHo community. And so we have a lot planned for Pride Month at all of our stores. We're doing a month-long charity campaign where we're donating a portion of sale proceeds to the Human Rights Campaign. And that's a LGBTQ advocacy group that's nationwide. So, you know, really important, especially now with all the things that are happening in Florida and other places. So we're doing that as a charity campaign. We are having a lot of events at our West Hollywood location. So we're having, you know, a meet and greet with Jada Essence Hall, who won RuPaul's Drag Race next week. We're doing
nice
monthly drag brunch. In a couple weeks, we're having a Pride edition Puff and Paint twice this month, where Scoot, aka Scott Llewellyn, who is a gay artist, will be teaching the class and doing some kind of Pride themed art. We'll be at the WeHo Pride Parade Street Festival all weekend, this coming weekend, and same in Fresno. They have their Fresno Pride this weekend. So, you know, we're sponsors of those events and we'll have booths and activations there. Our exhibits in all of our locations are all featuring LGBTQ artists. So we have a full Pride art showcase. You know, so we're really celebrating Pride Month, and it's something we do every year, something that's really personally important to me and exciting and fun.
I love that. Lauren, we are at time, but anything else you'd like us to know? Love your sense of community, your sense of engagement, your sense of support for you know, local artists, you know, and those who participate in cannabis and otherwise. But anything else that you feel is really important for us to understand about the artistry?
I think just our consumption lounge. So, you know, this is another area where the industry is moving that way, but it's really slow. And we do have one of the only consumption lounges in LA. We have it in our WeHo location, but it's an entirely separate area from the retail store where it functions more like a restaurant where we have a lot of events and food. And so I think, you know, we're primarily known for retail, but we have this really great consumption lounge space, and we're actually opening a second consumption lounge in Hawthorne, which is a South Bay area of Los Angeles. So that'll be coming sometime next year. But I encourage people to check out the lounge. I think people will be really surprised at what a cannabis consumption venue can be, that it can feel like just like any other nice restaurant or bar, and it's not, you know, an Amsterdam coffee shop. So I think, you know, I'd love for people to check it out and just see kind of like the forefront of the future of cannabis consumption.
I love that. I love that. We'll have to have a follow-up for sure, you know, really just on consumption lounges, because that is a topic within its own right. But Lauren Fontaine, founder of The Artistry, really appreciate your time and joining us today and kind of walking us through what's happening in LA and California and beyond.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
That was cool, man. I gotta tell you, what an interesting ethos. Like, I grew up in music. I know we have a lot of musicians that work at Benzinga. I'm far from alone in that, right? But I think that is the same everywhere. People gravitate towards music. People gravitate towards that community. And there's
like a jam session next show.
Apparently, yeah.
I'll break up the guitar and
yeah, I'll sit here and listen to you with a canned beverage in my hand, wishing I was at the Artistry Consumption Lounge. all in all, though, y'all, appreciate
Lauren
you tuning
was
in.
Drinking water on the background, and she heard it, and she's like, "What?"
No, seriously, though, whenever we go to LA next, I will be stopping by the WeHo location because that sounds phenomenal.
It is.
Yeah, it is. Have you been there?
I have not. I've seen it.
Oh, I was about to be like, "How could you not say that while she was on?" Come on, man.
I would have. Every time I'm in LA, I honestly like. Basically stay wherever I'm staying, like at the house or whatever. I'm there like usually for business, but everything is so big and far apart that it just feels dissuaded from exploring, which is like the worst traveler attitude you could have. But you know, it is what it is.
Hey, Javi, I have a word for you. Do you want to hear it? Lame. No.
Yeah.
When you go to LA, you got to experience LA, man. So I'm talking, you got to go, sir, for Vanderpump Rules, and then you got to go to the Artistry, right? That's a full night right there. So all in all, though, Javi, awesome, awesome show. Great interview. Honestly, if you're going to look at stocks today, y'all, if you take anything away on that front, I think keep an eye on Kronos. Obviously, keep an eye on Zalira Therapeutics. Mm-hmm. They are doing some cool things over there. We had a great exclusive for Terrasen and Gage Cannabis. So there are things happening in this space. Keep an eye on companies that are effectively navigating their operational expenses. GTI, phenomenal balance sheet. But we will be on again on Tuesday at 1 Eastern time. This show will no longer be at 4. We will be at 1 Eastern time on Tuesday. And then
is getting promoted to the financial
getting promoted. About time. Aaron Thomas kept us in the trash can for a while. Yep. No, I'm kidding. No, appreciate everybody for tuning in. AT is the impetus to our success. I'm telling you, AT is the reason for the season. Javi, love you, man. Thank you again, Lauren. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you again next time. Peace.